Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. As you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show, and if you've missed any of the shows, you can go back and listen to the archives. Well, today I'm interviewing director, writer, and producer Mike Dugan, and I think I have him on the line here. Let's check. Okay, Mike, are you there?
I am here.
Oh, great. Okay. Okay, well, we've done a lot of things, and we're going to cover quite a bit with you, but you started working in advertising and then ended up in the film industry. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got your start?
It was kind of funny. I had actually started out in finance and went to the Wharton Business School, and from there I ended up at an ad agency as an account executive. So once I got there, I saw that there was a whole floor of the ad agency that were creative people, and all I ever wanted to do was write commercials. So I'm not sure if you're going to say this is fortunate or unfortunate, but I was on the Rely tampon account, and at the time when they had toxic shock syndrome. So,
oh wow!
They Procter & Gamble pulled my account off the market, and they didn't know what to do with me. So, at that point, I asked, "Can I go to the creative department?" And they were wonderful. They actually let me do it, and so I started writing commercials, which is really nice. But in the meantime, my brother was off to USC Film School, and they had what's called Agent Night there, and he had taken my screenplay at a time called Macho Housewives, which turned out to be Raging Hormones, to Agent Night, and somebody grabbed it and optioned it. So it was not a terribly brilliant move, but I got an option offer in Los Angeles and ended up quitting my job as the youngest vice president at the ad agency ever and moved out to Los Angeles. So I was a night watchman in about a half an hour.
And you've written for so many different things. A lot of different programs, and I know you wrote, directed, and produced Mousercise, which was on the Disney Channel for 10 years. How did that writing process work? If it was every day, did you write the episodes ahead of time, or was it a weekly process?
That's a great question, because writers work in so many different ways, and I like to work. When I get inspired, I like to just kind of immerse myself and write. And then I might not write for a little bit. It's not like it's a thing you can wake up in the morning and do every day. For me. Now, it is for some other writers. However, with Mousercise, in order to get the job, I had to promise the producer that, one, I would take the job and do it. He hired me. Actually, I was hired as the runner on the show. I was actually getting everybody cigarettes and ham sandwiches. What turned out is that Disney had commissioned 30 shows, and they only had two writers, and those guys got in trouble, and they couldn't. They couldn't pump out enough shows. And fortunately, I was a writer, but I was in Los Angeles where nobody knew who I was. And he said, well, do you think you could write a couple of shows? And God bless him, he gave me a couple shows, and I wrote them. And also, at the time, Disney was producing the whole Disney Channel, but they were hiring everybody in a non-DGA four.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was they had a DGA director, but who was not getting, you know, not working DGA, and the DGA came to inspect it. So we had a phone call from the gate at the studio, and they said the DGA is here. So everybody kind of like panicked, and the director said, or the producer said, "Hey, you think you could direct the show?" And I, you know, I, of course you're going to say yes. So the next thing you know, I had 20 Disney credits under my belt, and I had directed 20, the final 20 shows of Master Size. And so it worked out well. Everybody was happy, and I suddenly had broken my way into Hollywood.
Yeah, and I was asking before, how does the writing process work for that? If it's a weekly show, do you do all the episodes ahead of time at that point, or was it kind of a week by week, hey, we need to write a show about this? Did they give you talking points, or how did that work?
Well, the interesting thing about Master Size was we basically shot five 30-minute shows a day. So the writing all had to be done well before the mm-hmm. actual shooting. And it happens that way also in the soap operas. When I wrote Days of Our Lives and General Hospital, everything mm-hmm. was done beforehand. So what happens is it's all written. With the soap operas, it's very much a what I'd like to call a, you know, just a it's like a factory. There's mm-hmm. there's writers for the long show, there's writers for the short show, and then there's dialogue writers. I was always just a dialogue writer. I mm-hmm. moved on to other things before I was anything else. So what happens is you're given a breakdown of what's supposed to happen on your show. And
uh-huh.
and you write that, but you're only given like 3 days. So in 3 days, you have to write an hour-long show. And but they give you act by act what has to happen. So you're not you don't have a lot of creative flexibility other than the dialogue. But
uh-huh.
your creativity has to appear in the dialogue because obviously that's, you know, what they want you to do. So everything's written before it's actually shot.
Mm-hmm. Right, like any film script. Now, how did you get into soap operas? How did you pitch a spec or a sample script to them and then they hired you, or did you write something specifically for them? Because I've heard if you should, you know, if you want to pitch, you should pitch something that's similar but not from the same show, something like that. So how did you get into that?
Well, you're absolutely right about that. If you pitch something or if you write a spec script, you should definitely not write the same show that these guys are working on, because the thing is they're so wrapped up in that show, they know everything about it. And they're going to know every flaw in the world that you have no idea about. I got very lucky. My agent actually got me a spec, just a job to do a spec script for the soap opera called Loving, which was mm-hmm. only a 30-minute soap opera, which, and it didn't last very long. But he got me that, and so I wrote one of those. The thing is they send you like a ton of scripts to, you know, let you catch up on the backstories and things, and mm-hmm. then you write it, and you know, off it goes. But
oh, great.
Mm-hmm.
Great. sounds easy enough.
It's none of this is brain surgery. The toughest thing is getting in the door.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what everybody wants to know, is how you get into that door. And you had an agent that helped you out quite a bit. So how did – and you said you got the agent from the original script that you had from your brother?
I got my agent for these – yeah. The funny thing is agents very well do get you in the door. Sometimes you wonder whether they do anything else for you. And it's kind of comical because they once they get you, they really don't always push you. However,
right.
I had Spielberg's sister who wrote the movie, which was really good, called Big. She ended up, she was working as a temp for one of my friends who is had gone to my business school. And it was funny because my friend said, I have a friend. And she had just sold Big at the time when she gave me my first agent. And and because of her referral, I think he took me. And at that point, I didn't have that many really good scripts. I think he trusted her and he trusted the name. Obviously, the Spielberg name worked quite well. And he took me on. And so I was off the races. And that's kind of what happened. And that all happened when I was in New York. I had not moved out to L.A. at that point.
Okay. Now, does it work differently when you're selling a script like to NBC or Sony? I know you had a lot of movies of the week. Is it different, or is the paperwork process kind of the same? How does that work if you're selling a whole script off to them?
The thing is, every script is very, very different. Because you never know who's going to buy it and who's going to want it. The funny thing is when I sold a movie of the week to NBC, they were very into Barbara Eden, who just happened, you know, who was, I'm sure I Dream of Jeannie and all that.
Right.
And so they were very into the Women in Jeopardy thing. And and I had a story idea that was a Woman in Jeopardy thing. And so I was also working at the time on Days of Our Lives. And the owner of Days of Our Lives listened to it. He had a couple of movie ideas. And I threw this at him, and we all, so we ended up throwing it at NBC. So we ended up with a project called Forget Me Not, which is about a woman who basically had an affair with a guy and wanted to convince him that he was her husband, not someone else's. It was kind of, at the time, a fatal attraction.
Uh-huh.
And so what happened was NBC bought into it, and they gave us the money to write the script. They kind of, they were always wondering how Barbara Eden could fit into it, which was very funny because she's, I guess she's like money in the bank for them.
Yeah.
And so so we were always trying to make it for, at that point, Barbara Eden was probably a middle-aged woman, and and so we were trying to make it where she could do that. And it was a very, it actually was a fun film. The problem was the executive that brought it to NBC and wanted us to do it actually, she was pregnant. And unfortunately, right when they needed, you know, had the meeting where everybody was presenting their project or the movie of the week projects for that season. She was in the hospital having the baby.
Wow.
So of course they slipped that project to somebody else, and they didn't know quite what was going on. So NBC paid for the project, but they never went forward with it. And that was kind of disappointing because it's a really good project. But this was with Ken Corday, and Ken is the owner of Days of Our Lives, which is one of the few remaining soap operas still on.
Mm-hmm.
But it was
now,
fun.
you have done so many of these movies of the week and weekly programs. I know that you were nominated 6 times for an Emmy, and you got the Emmy 5 times. Tell us a little bit about why those weekly programs that you did were so successful, and how did you get considered for the Emmy? How does that process work?
I love that question because when I moved to Florida, I thought my career as a writer was over. It was, totally over. However, there were a lot of production companies down here who were producing television shows that were about, health issues. And there were not many writers here. So once I hooked up with these guys, all of a sudden I found my niche, which was really nice. And the great thing about these shows were because of the FDA, they couldn't be advertising. So they could not give me a lot of direction. And so what they had to do is just say, write a half hour about depression, or write a half hour about schizophrenia, or write about stroke. And the thing is, if they were to give me a lot of direction, it would have been a commercial and it had to follow the FDA auspices. So I had an enormous amount of freedom. And these are enormous, issues going on. I especially like the the mental issues of schizophrenia and depression. And they allowed me pretty much to write what I wanted and to only mention their drug maybe once or twice in the entire half hour. But you've got to graphically display what are the issues, what's causing everybody the trouble of schizophrenia. So it's funny because I use my 2 kids as parts of the hallucinations people see. And they remember they were children back then. But I smoked up 5-star productions with the production company. I smoked up the office and had, my daughter walking through it in some crazy ghost outfit, and had my son doing the voiceovers of the kids talking in this guy's brain. And we went to Cleveland, myself and Steve Reed, and we interviewed the guy that was on the cover of Time magazine for about schizophrenia, and we really put together a very, very nice show. And so that won an Emmy. And then with Major Depression, it was the same thing. I don't know why, but I just, probably because I'm a writer, and mental disorders are probably endemic in our life. But I did, a couple of good ones with depression, too. So there were 2 shows that were about major depression, and there was a couple about stroke and breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And so we won Emmys on those, too.
How did you get the Emmy? How does that process work? How do you submit it to the Emmy department? how do you get that process going?
I had nothing to do with that.
Okay.
Because
yeah, I don't know much about that myself, so.
Nor do I. What okay. The thing, funny thing is since I'm a freelance writer, oftentimes you don't know what these companies are doing with the work you do. But these were all with different companies, and they all submitted them to the Emmy Awards without I didn't do it.
Okay. Now you're pitching a project. Well, let's talk about this now. You're pitching a project called Chubby Chasers, and I don't know how much you can talk about it yet, but can you tell us anything about it, who you're pitching it to or how you're going about pitching it?
Oh, absolutely. It's funny because after 30 years, I finally decided it's time to take a screenwriting course. And I know that sounds crazy, but you have to realize that there's very many things that you don't know, and that you should know, and you can't always feel like you know everything just because you've been there, and you saw stuff. So it's very funny because I signed up for this course, and the teacher's like, "Well, you could teach this course." And I said, no, I want to learn what's going on now. And so I ended up taking a screenwriting course, and I had this enormously deep message movie that I wanted to make. And it was like, oh, my God. And so I was thinking about it, and I went, wait a minute. If I'm going to spend the next 6 months writing, I want to have fun.
Yeah.
So I decided, you know what? I'm going to do a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And so Chubby Chasers came in. It was I had actually taken two women down to the Exotica Festival in Miami.
Uh-huh.
And one was quite large. And she said, oh, I'm coming back on Sunday because it's Chubby Chaser Day. And I went, oh, what is that? And she said, Chubby Chasers are guys that like big women. So it's funny because if you watch City Island, the kids very much a Chubby Chaser. And that was a really, really good movie about 2 years ago. So so I thought, oh, so this has got to be, you know, something nobody knows about, and or at least I did. And so anyhow, I decided, all right, we're going to, I'm going to write a movie about remember the producers? The producers was about a movie that had to create a flop, a total flop. That they could sell, you know, 300 or 400 times the investment potential. This was, I decided, okay, here we have two guys that have to be money launderers, and they need basically the worst business in the world. So they set up the worst business in the world, which is actually a strip bar in a Christian community with overweight women. You would think that's probably going to be empty.
Yeah.
However, the funny thing is because it's a strip bar, the Christians protest, and they make the news, and the next thing you know, The people start showing up from everywhere because they're what we call chubby chasers, and they love big women. And so, of course, these four guys who wanted to set up an absolute business that was a failure end up with an absolute business that's a gold mine.
Uh-huh.
And of course, the mob boss that forced them to do it is really pissed off because they can't launder the money anymore because there's so much money coming in. So,
yeah.
But the theme of the movie, and what makes it so positive, is that it's not about, you know, who you are. It's like there's somebody for everybody. And,
uh-huh.
for, you know, for big women, there's guys that like big women, and there's guys that like small women. But there's no, you know, just because you're a big woman, you don't have to feel like you're not loved.
Mm-hmm. This kind of leads us into
And I kind of got a little of that from Raging Hormones because
exactly.
When, you know, in Raging Hormones, of course, I have these two women who are overweight, and I have them in spandex. And
mm-hmm.
What's wonderful is I had so many people write me on Facebook and everything else that they call themselves BBWs, which is Big Beautiful Women.
Mm-hmm.
And they just thought that was the most positive display of heavy women ever. And I'm friends with like so many big women. It's crazy. So Chubby Chases has almost been yet a natural extension.
Uh-huh. Raging Hormones really reminds me of some of the 80s sexual comedies, like the Shiver Me Timbers seemed like it was taken right out of Fast Times from Ridgemont High. Did some of those movies kind of inspire you to do it?
Oh, God, yes. My main character is definitely designed after Sean Penn in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
I was right.
he has at least, you know, 45 different jobs. And then these two women want to turn him into their slave. And he jumps into that with, you know, wholehearted.
I saw a clown motif going on with the clowns at the store. I saw a clown motif with the clowns at the store and the mother's makeup. What was the clown stuff about? How'd you come up with that?
The clown stuff was very interesting because I have a friend who did the music, and she did an awesome job called Shauna Monahan. And she hated clowns. She had this like crazy ass fetish of clowns. You know, clowns just scared the hell out of her, which is actually inspired a new screenplay of mine, it's called Clown Freak. But Shauna was terrified of clowns. So I said, I'm going to turn a whole supermarket into clowns.
That's funny. It's evil.
And so it was, everything we did there was just torture for poor Shauna. And,
that's great.
She did an amazing job. I'm sorry?
Where did you shoot it? Because that grocery store looks familiar.
Oh, okay. That grocery store is, and I don't know how many people are who are listening or living in Florida. However, that grocery store is right at the Hillsborough exit of 95. It's just a little bit east, and it was the Pick, Pay, and Pawn Shop. So the front of the grocery store was a pawn shop. And this guy was so delighted that I gave him a location fee because we actually had to use it for 1 day and 3 overnights in order to make the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just so happy because, you know, at 11 o'clock, we would come in and start shooting. And at 6 o'clock, we would, you know, we would have to clear out of there, and he would get a big fee. And he really liked it.
Yeah.
The funny thing, when we shot, you know, the opening credits were, we're actually peeling everything out of the.
That was really clever.
The thing is, that gives you the coupon. Mm-hmm. We did that in about 10 minutes because he was trying to sweep us out of there. And mm-hmm. and we, like, hid in the back and put, you know, and did that shot. So it was pretty funny. But, yes, that was a pick and pay and pawn shop. So it was a pawn shop and a grocery store. The problem was is
many
grocery stores have a corporate
office. I haven't been there.
And it takes so many letters and everything, and they got to read your script and all this sort of thing. Because I tried to shoot in a Publix, and it was you would need an act of Congress to get there.
Yeah.
So you have to go to the little stores, and this guy was delighted to have us, and he was mm-hmm. a really, really nice guy.
Now, you have a lot of nudity in this, not a lot, but you have some nudity. Was your cast nervous about that, and how did you make them feel at ease about it?
Nudity was like probably my number one problem, because mm-hmm. The women who I hired to be actresses didn't want to do any.
Mm-hmm.
And so fortunately I had one friend who didn't care about it. And she was the one that went on Howard Stern with me when we sold it to HBO. However, the star who I needed to be nude because she had to go into the bathtub would not do it. So I had to hire a body model. And so to be honest, that was the most difficult thing about the movie because I must have hired three different body models who were strippers. And unfortunately, strippers are not always dependable. And
Yeah, I know that. Had to deal with some of those.
And so the first two never showed up when they were supposed to. And finally, on the very last day, we hired one woman who was a body model who came in. And she came in, and she had an inverted nipple.
Oh.
Now, the woman who would not actually do the bathtub scene, she was an exact match. It was beautiful. But the woman who would not do the exact, who would not do the bathtub scene was so pissed off because everybody thought she had an inverted nipple. Frankly, I had never even heard of an inverted nipple at that point. It's one of those things where you get completely, you're shooting and it's like, what? So anyhow. We shot the scene anyway, and I don't think anybody cares whether it was an inverted nipple or not, because I think I put some soap suds up there.
I don't remember her being naked, really, in the bathtub.
It was my last day of the shoot. Is the only scene I needed to get. It was like, holy God, what am I, you know, what are you going to do? So that was actually a very fun thing, but it was like, oh God. And the funny thing is one of my reviews is they didn't think I had enough nudity in it. And the thing is, you know, I probably could have put some more nudity in it, but it was all about the story. You have to stick with the story, and I don't think the story dictated any more than what I put in there, so who knows?
You have some great characters. I love
better,
the mom.
But you have to do
but
what
that
you
actress
have to
that
do.
Played the mom was great.
Oh, that was Della Hobby, and she is she's just amazing. I asked her to. I really wanted when I wrote the thing. Divine was alive, and I don't know if you know who Divine is, but Divine was in the John Waters movies, and I wrote it for Divine.
Yeah, of course.
And because John Waters is always, he was kind of a mentor for me, and he kind of moved me forward. So I wrote it for Divine, and of course she died long before I ever got into production for this. So what I did is I asked Della to watch Pink Flamingos and all these Mondo Trashos and all these crazy John Waters movies. And God bless her, she did.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't cite me for, whatever. And then she, like, just completely encapsulated the Divine persona.
Yeah.
And I don't think, I'm not sure Divine could have done Divine as well.
Yeah. Now, how do people see the movie? It was made a long time ago, but back in 1999, so how do people see it now?
Okay. It's on Amazon streaming. Netflix has it, but Netflix only has it with a DVD, and they don't, so you have to go to Amazon.
Great.
But the movie's out there. It's funny because now my children, who were in the movie when they were very young, my daughter sometimes becomes extremely embarrassed because, fraternities like it and all this sort of thing. It's definitely a crazy ass movie, but every now and then she gets letters from her IMDb thing, and that somebody's watched it. But you can get it from Amazon, you get it from CreateSpace, and unfortunately you can order it on Netflix, but you'll never get it. So the best thing is Amazon and CreateSpace.
Okay. Now, we're kind of running out of time, so I want to make sure that if you have a website or some way that people can kind of find out more about you or contact you, that you can give it out for everybody.
Oh, I actually have two websites. The easiest one is thrillstreet.com. My production company is Thrill Street Entertainment. So it's like thrillstreet.com. Or you can just go to Michael Dugan, michaeldugan.info.
Info.
Okay. So I have two websites where you can get in touch with me.
Great. Okay. Well, we have so many things to talk about, but we're out of time. So maybe I'll bring you back another time. We'll talk some more.
Rachel, thank you so much. I loved it. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I'm sure I'll see you soon.
Okay.
Thanks.
Take care.
Thanks,
now.
Mike. All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, that was a fun conversation with Mike Dugan. As you can see, or as you can hear, he's done a ton of stuff and is a wealth of information that we didn't have a chance to really delve into because we covered so many topics in such a short amount of time. It was hard to kind of get at some of those little details that we'd probably like to hear more about. So maybe I can bring him back on at some point and talk a little bit more about that. But I did have a chance to see his movie Raging Hormones, and it took me right back to the 80s, the days of Porky's and all those 80s sex romp comedies. And when I first started watching, I thought, what is this? But then I actually have to admit I watched it twice because I liked it so much. The characters are kind of outlandish. It's not you know, Oscar-winning drama, but it's just fun, you know, and it's got that nudity element that's nice, I guess, as well. Don't want to go. That's a whole other show. Don't want to go there. Okay, guys, moving on. if you haven't listened to our archives, we have some great shows. Last week I had Edith Sabula talking about Rumandar, so you should go back and listen. That was a great interview as well. And I've got over 80 in the archive to listen to. Also, I've been putting tons of updates on my website for upcoming events, especially in the Florida area since I'm here. Also, other information that you need to know. So check out my website, www.independentstreak.ning.com. And also, please check out my Facebook, which is www.indiestreak. www.facebook.com/indiestreak, just like the show here. And please like the page because I'm really active in putting a lot of information out. For example, Filmgate is happening right now in Miami. If you're not familiar with it, it's a fairly new concept. A friend of mine is putting it together, Jose Jaco, who actually was on this show last year at this time, talking about Filmgate. So you can go back and listen to that archive. But that's going on the 1st through the 5th, dealing with transmedia, putting together music and live entertainment and film and all these things together. It's kind of an exciting concept down in Miami happening right now. Also, the Miami Jewish Film Festival is wrapping up, and I have information on both of those and some upcoming festivals on my website, as well as Rally and Tally, where they're trying to rally a lot of people together regarding the film industry and film incentives and all those things that actors want. They're trying to get some people together for that. I'm just updating pretty much daily on that site, so keep an eye on that. And if you're a filmmaker out there and you'd like to come on the show, or if you have some film news that you'd like to be out there, feel free to contact me. I don't make any guarantees, but I will look at it and see what we can do. My email is ravenprods@yahoo.com. That's ravenprods at yahoo.com. And I thank you guys for listening today, and I will be back next week with someone new. So please tune in, same channel, same time. Thanks. Bye.